It's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Great, good day to you. Welcome inside the very dry, and I'm lucky to be inside air-conditioned clubhouse this morning. Come on in, get cooled off. I know it's hot and humid. I've got a great show for you. I have found the person who finally answered a huge question for me. He's a coach. He's a teacher. He's the founder of one of America's top golf schools. It's Extraordinary Golf. He's an author. Several books, Extraordinary Golf, The Art of the Possible, Extraordinary Putting, Transforming the Whole Game, and he has a two-hour video, Extraordinary Golf, The Secret to Transforming Your Game. Welcome to the show, Fred Shoemaker.
Danielle, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm going to call you Fred. Is that okay?
Perfect. Great.
Excellent. All right. So as I said, I was getting ready for work and I was watching Morning Drive, and you're on with Damon Hack, a guest on the show in the past. And I was so impressed with your teaching. And the one thing that you did immediately for me that stopped me in my tracks as I'm busy around 3:30 trying to get ready for work, you explain the difference between a coach and a teacher unlike anyone has ever done before. Can we just start with that?
Well, I said to Damon, I said, you know, teaching is one aspect of a way to go about things. And teaching could be, I have something, and I'm going to try to put it over there. And I said, as contrast to coaching, coaching may be you have something, and we're going to try to bring it out.
That's perfect. See, a teacher gives you information, technique, whatever it is that you may not have, and tries to give that to you. But a coach sees something inside of you that you may not even know and brings that out.
It was
like, okay, finally, I understand the difference between coaching and teaching. And then from there, you just blew my mind with the way you got the body and the mind engaged in the swing and how you got the setup. Hey, how long have you been doing this?
For 40 years.
Ah.
I was a golf coach at University of California at Santa Barbara 40 years ago.
Wow.
So with Damon, basically what we did is that each body is unique. And I said, okay, Damon, we're going to go into a process of how to discover how this one works. So each person has a unique way of their own stance, their own turn, their own swing plane. And I think we just went through a time of self-discovery, which is best you can in television, which is a short period of time, to be able to have him sense how his body actually has been designed. And see, since each body is so different, how can I ever know where some swing plane ought to be, or how wide someone should stand, or how much their turn, or should they lift their heel? But I think it's possible people can learn that for themselves, and when they do learn it for themselves, they seem to own it more and can coach themselves in the future better.
When you talk about, and this is interesting, but before I get to throwing the club aspect of your teaching, what I was thinking when I saw you is a lot of people have said, okay, if you want to find your stance, jump up and then land. And where you land is your natural stance. Is that correct?
Well, there's a lot of ways of doing it, and that's one way. Yes.
So your body naturally knows what it's supposed to do. We don't have to figure it out with our mind if we let our body be a part of the process without the thinking.
Well, they say the most difficult human task is to walk downstairs. They can't teach it to a robot. I mean, you learn that in no time at all. We learn to eat and not stab a fork into our lips. I mean, there's 1,000 things we do brilliantly. Why is it when we come to golf, it has to be so much in terms of formulas and prescriptions? Could it be more just about discovery?
So
that's what I was posing.
Yes, exactly. So when you told him to, for instance, get into a stance, you got him and you said, okay, now you're going to tackle a big guy. Now, show me how you're going to tackle this big guy. And then you said, okay, now you're going to go after a little three-year-old. What were you trying to accomplish with
that? Well, there's a way that we get balance when we're really going to do something big, and that's a driver shot. And if you're going to dodge a three-year-old, that would be like a wedge shot. And then I said, listen, while you're in that position, imagine someone calls you over your right shoulder and turn and look at them. Have you ever met anyone in your life who didn't know how to turn and look at something?
And no, that was perfect.
So, but now, when he does that, as a coach, you can observe, does he raise his heel? Does his, you know, how do his hip flexors work? He can coach me how to coach him. And that's the fun part.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah. When you showed his turn, you know, when you said turn and look at something, that immediately told me that I don't have to, you know, there's no one proper way of doing it. There's not, this is the right way, Danielle, and you're doing it the wrong way.
Yeah, yeah. To have him to be able to now while he's turned, now to feel it for yourself. Because the great developer in golf is not information and concepts. It's awareness. The capacity to be present to something and to learn from that being present to it. And if he could start to feel it for himself, that's a big step forward. And then I asked him, once he's turned back there, put your hand in a place that feels comfortable to you, your right hand up in the air, as if you're going to throw something forward. And he can coach me in where his swing plane needs to be. Some people put their hand lower, some higher, some closer to them, some further away. But each person has a unique place up there from which they can respond to a target. So I just find that it's much more interesting having a person learn how to coach themselves than staying in a formula for all these 40 years.
Yeah.
And I find it way, way, way more valuable for when they get on the golf course to be able to play versus always trying to remember, what did I do in the driving range? What was working? What wasn't working? I mean, to play golf as some sort of form of self-expression and freedom may be the highest aspiration of the game.
I'm going to have to go back to that golf club throwing moment that I said alluded to. In one article I read about you, because I've not had the pleasure, and I'm sure it's a pleasure to have go to a school with you. Do you actually use the golf club throwing to find out how a person has, what their swing is, their target? Tell me about that.
Yeah, we film them hitting golf balls, and then we say, listen, imagine somebody snitched your wallet, and you got one shot to hit him in the rear end with a golf club. Just throw it. Just go. And we film that, too. And people who think they're, you know, on they stand their back foot, they come across the ball, the elbow lifts up, the club face is open, all that stuff. And then they look at this other thing, the other picture of them responding in a way that's instinctual to them. And I've done this, you know, thousands of times. And people always say, wow, that's a really good motion. If you knew you had that in you, it would change the way that you might practice and the way you might play. People are way, way, way more capable than they give themselves credit for. Most people think, I'm kind of lousy and I'm going to work my way through it someday, hacking in the wilderness. But when you can really see there's something already there, then the game changes to how do I bring this out? It's that thing that's already there, that motion that's already there, that beautiful sequence that's already there.
And it's, you said it was like an athletic, the person throwing the club, you could see their athleticism in that moment, whereas when they were trying to show you how they could swing the club, all very technical, there wasn't the athleticism that was demonstrated in just throw the club to the target.
Yes. Well, if you go on the internet and Google children hitting golf balls, everybody thinks their child's a genius. You know, all these three-year-olds have great swings. Well, of course they do. They have a great swing until mom and dad says, keep your head down, and, you know, et cetera. People are born with something that's unique to them. And we have our own way of doing it. And when you can learn to play golf out of something that's unique to you, it's a lot easier to be consistent and a lot easier to have it from day to day something that works for you versus trying to always find what's the answer, what's the formula, what's the hot swing of the day, whose swing should I copy? You know, maybe the answer isn't outside of yourself.
It's inside. And what you said there is really critical about three-year-olds versus older people taking up the game. And everyone wishes they'd taken up the game earlier when they start playing the game of golf, right? Right. So I have a 3-year-old who takes the golf. We go to demo day, and they had one of those snag affairs going on, and he grabbed the club, and he hit the ball, and he had this beautiful little swing, and now he's 12. And he goes back, and he picks up the club, and he's making contact, but he immediately looks back at us like, that wasn't really good. And I could,
we have trained young people that performance is everything. Rarely do they walk off a golf course and have someone say, what did you learn today? Or how was the enjoyment today? Almost always, what'd you shoot and how good are you? So we've trained him that his character and his performance are somehow related. We all get that. But when he's young and has a certain sense of freedom, and missing shots doesn't matter. I mean, failure is part of the process. You know, it's part of the learning process until someone says, uh-oh, that's not so good. And when they're young, we always cheer their good shots, and it gets them to be basically as neurotic as us.
We're talking with Fred Shoemaker. He's coach and teacher, very different things, and I hope you've got that, because it's really important to know that there is someone who can bring in outside of you what is already inside you. And I think we forget that, you know. And I've always looked for someone. I know there's something inside of me. Help bring that out. And founder of one of America's top golf schools, Extraordinary Golf. He's on the West Coast. His name is Fred Shoemaker. I want to continue this conversation. We're going to take a break first. Is that okay?
That'd be great.
We'll be back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
All right, we're talking with Fred Shoemaker, coach, teacher, founder of Extraordinary Golf, and he's an extraordinary teacher. One gentleman who went to his school, Michael Bader, an author and psychologist and a psychoanalyst who lives in San Francisco, he wrote a great article about Mr. Shoemaker's philosophies and how he teaches. And in one sentence he writes, Shoemaker's aim is to help students distinguish between being in their heads and being fully present in their bodies. Wow. That it sums up everything, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I mean, how can you learn anything without being present to it? And mostly we don't know the difference between being in our heads in a story, in a conversation, in a drama, versus being present in the world, in our senses. And most of the time when we go around a golf course, it'll be something like this. Your mind will be saying, okay, I'm 3 over par, I got a 5 par coming up, if I could birdie that, I could, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Rather than being able to be out here in the world, seeing the golf course in front of you, I've never met a person who said, you know, I was really present that day and had a bad day. It's just not possible. But we don't go to first grade and learn how to be present. And in second grade, learn how to trust ourselves. And in third grade, maybe learn how to find compassion. These things we're supposed to somehow come by. And golf is a great venue for teaching you to learn, you know, for learning to be present, because you're not going to play pretty good golf until you can be present to things that are happening.
How do I get that voice that keeps saying, you know, gee, I don't know if I'm standing right. Gee, I don't know if my target, am I lined up right? Is the ball in the right position in my stance? Do I have the right club? Am I coming down on the ball with the, you know, head in the right position?
Yeah.
All of that.
You know, you'd be surprised that people who play for a living have basically the same voice as you do. Theirs is something as if I miss hit that someone look like an idiot in front of a million people. But that little voice that chats all the time, sometimes people think it's supposed to go away or say different things. I mean, most people share with us the same voice they've had since they're 7 years old. They should be smarter and kinder and hit it further or putt better. But suppose that voice, The most important thing you can do with it is nothing. Just let it alone. It's going to keep chatting. Don't take it personally. Everybody's got one. Yours is probably partially your mother, your father, and who knows what else. And so sometimes if you can say, you know, the voice says you stand over a three-footer, and it says if you miss it, you're going to look like an idiot. And you could say, you know, thanks for sharing, but what do I choose? And come back to something that's real. The real's the, you know, what's real in golf? The ball is real. You can touch it. The club is real. The environment's real. And your body is real. Everything else is just a thought going through. Come back to something that's real, and it makes a difference.
Okay.
Nobody I've ever met has ever stopped the voice in their head or ever positive thought it out, you know?
So you mean bombarding it with positive affirmations is not going to get rid of it?
Well, I did that in the 1980s. I thought I would have, you know, be positive about things. And I realized it's just more talking. You know, mostly positive thinking is for negative thinkers. I mean, it's just more thinking. It somehow may have a better effect, but it didn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, instead of going that route, I just noticed it says pretty much the same thing since I'm 7 years old. I mean, if you do a golf school and you stand on the first tee of the students, my mind will say, if you mishit it, it's going to invalidate the whole work you've been doing.
Oh, my goodness.
Of course it does. And then at that moment, I have a choice, whether to go down that tunnel and get all nervous and have my hands feel weird, or to say, hey, thanks, I'm not going there. I'm choosing to go to play a shot to a target out there. That moment of choice is probably the biggest moment in golf. Most people don't think they have one. They think that's just the way the world is. I got to deal with the voice in my head. But suppose you don't have to. Suppose there are lots of choices. And the practicing of that on a day-to-day basis makes a big difference.
I love what you just said. Thanks for sharing.
I'm
going to do...
Yes.
It's like, okay. Now, it's something else that came to me when I was reading about you, and we're talking with Fred Shoemaker, coach, teacher, and founder of America's Top Golf Schools, Extraordinary Golf. And I have to, after I got to get this thought out, we've got to figure out where we can go to your school. But the interesting thing about the distinction between the golf professional and the recreational amateur player, and I know there's a distinction between the two, but I'm just trying to, you know, separate the professional, really high-level golfer that we watch on television, is that their target is always in the distance to where they're hitting. And we, us recreational players, let's put it that way, look at the ball as the target.
Really good. When you ask a person, you're 100 yards from the hole, and you ask them what their target, everybody says the green or the hole. Then you say, okay, you're at the top of the swing. What's your target? Most amateurs say the ball. And very few of them realize they switch targets in the middle of their swing. See, when a professional gets to the top, he sees the ball. Of course he sees it. But all the energy and all the intention is to propel that to a target. When an amateur gets to the top of the swing, generally, they say, please let me hit this thing so I look, don't look silly. It's about survival and somehow produce solid contact. And given that, there's a certain technique that comes from that. Usually the body stalls and usually the club gets cast and a person kind of buckles through and has difficulty finishing. So remember, whatever has our mind has our body. Everyone knows the ball is not the target. But in the middle of the swing, we seem to make it like that. And our technique follows it. Whereas a professional is always have energy to target, always dancing with the target. They can't play professional golf unless they do.
My thought when I'm in my swing is, how in the world can I figure out how I can know exactly where the club head is at the moment that I'm coming down in my downswing? It's like, that's the thought that comes to my, where's the club head now? You know, and how do I know
yes.
that it's in the right place?
It's
the most bizarre thing that comes, and then I just get frustrated, and then I get a little angry, I'll admit it, and then I just want to hit the darn thing. And again, I'm just always about the ball.
Well, you see, the thing that changes golf more than any other thing at all is the trust of solid contact. You see, when you get a trust of solid contact, I'm not talking about perfection. You know that the ball is going to go about the height and about the distance that you want. When you get that, something happens that changes golf as nothing will ever change it again. There is a natural development to be able to hit to targets. But if you don't trust solid contact, you get to the top of the swing and everything becomes about that hope. And that happens to a lot of golfers. I mean, imagine if you were playing tennis and you never hit the ball in the string, you kept hitting it on the metal of the racket.
Mm.
And someone says to you, oh, let's talk about court strategy. You go, hey, wait a second, whoa. I need to hit the ball first before I do that. And golfers, even after 20 and 30 years, still don't trust they're going to hit a ball reasonably solid. And I think you can get through that stage rather quickly to get on to whatever may be next for you. See, this notion about creativity and artistry is so far down the line where most people are just at survival stage. Just let me hit it. And I think that's a thing to be completed. So you can get on to playing golf rather than always just worry about, can I make contact?
Okay. The golf school. Where is your golf school?
Well, we do golf schools around the U.S., but the main one is in Carmel, California, at Carmel Valley Ranch. And we do, and also down in Palm Springs, we do things down there, too. You know, you follow the weather in golf school.
Yeah.
Unlike Hawaii, yes.
Yeah, you won't be coming here in the next couple of days, but do you ever come to Hawaii to do golf schools?
Well, I've done a number of work with PGA groups there. I've done them at Waikoloa. I've done some work with Brian Paul at Kukui'ula on Kauai. I've done a number of things for teaching, coaching coaches on coaching.
Hi.
I really love that.
Yes.
So that's one of my favorite things now. So we do golf schools for individuals all over the country. And we do workshops for golf professionals also throughout the years we're doing that.
We're talking with Fred Shoemaker, coach, teacher, and founder of Extraordinary Golf. It's extraordinarygolf.com. Very easy. He's also the author of Extraordinary Golf, the Art of the Possible, and Extraordinary Putting, Transforming the Whole Game. He has a two-hour video, Extraordinary Golf, The Secret to Transforming Your Game. We're going to continue our conversation, but first we need to take a break. We'll be back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Yeah, yeah. A mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that?
Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
We're really fortunate to have Fred Shoemaker on the show, coach and teacher, founder of Extraordinary Golf. You can find him at extraordinarygolf.com. He's the author of Extraordinary Golf, The Art of the Possible, and Extraordinary Putting, Transforming the Whole Game. Before we talk a little bit about your books, I'd like to talk about going back to Michael Bader's, the author and psychologist and psychoanalyst from San Francisco who attended Mr. Shoemaker's school. He wrote this great article, and I thought this about the yips would be most interesting to so many people who not only have it with putting, but with other things. And I'm just going to read this a little bit so that, because Fred has no idea what I'm throwing at him and he's just going with the flow. A golfer's most frequent experience of being not present and therefore of being totally disconnected from any sensor motor awareness is often revealed on the putting green. The existence of the yips is a testament to the most extreme version of this experience, hence the tension, mental chatter, and disconnectedness from reality that regularly create blind spots in the full swing, take over completely. I, you know, so many people have the yips and they wonder if it's, you know, in the brain, and they have, some people actually have operations. That's the most extreme form.
Yeah.
What are we talking here? You know, the yips when you have that little shake right before you can't pull the trigger. It happens, I guess. I mean, we watched Tiger Woods with what they were calling the, short game yips.
Yeah. Well, this is a very interesting issue. And we may not be able to get it fully out, but we'll give it a little shot here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
As best we can. Okay. You can never solve a problem with the same point of view that you're first seeing it with. And in the yips and stabs and flinches, I'm going to throw out something that seems a little crazy. But my experience is the yips are not a problem. They're a solution to something. Now, I'm going to try to make this in a short time. If you get up to a 35-foot chip shot, see, here's what I'm going to start with, is that the body never does a stupid thing. It doesn't shake or stab or flip things around because it's dumb. It does it because it's brilliant. Now, every time you do a workshop with the people with the yips, let's suppose you step up and you have a 35-foot chip shot, and you begin to notice that the body is only giving 25 feet of energy to get the chip shot there. So how is it going to get that last part of energy? As you come down to a ball, let's suppose the only thing left is to shoot out with your forearm and hit it the extra 10 feet. And if you get very close to a ball and there's not enough energy, a lot of times the hands will flip and try to do it. People don't like that. They think that feels terrible. But the body is doing a brilliant thing to make up for something that they're unaware of that's happening before it. Due to some lack of awareness, the body is doing what it can to get it to a target. You see, yips don't happen to people who've just begun the game. They only happen to people once they get connected to a target and get the sense the target's out over there. Then the body somehow does whatever it needs to do. An example in putting is if your club face is open coming in, as it gets near the ball, it'll have this quick turning motion, which feels spastic, but it's the only way you can get a ball even reasonably close to the hole, even though it may pull it or sometimes even top a putt. So in a short term, in a very a simple sort of way, the yips are a brilliant body solution that makes up for something that you're unaware of that's happening prior to them.
Interesting. It's delving into what you're unaware of. I always thought it was something like the fear of a failure, of not making the putt, or of embarrassing oneself.
Yes, you hear it about it. It's like you have it because you're getting older, or there's the last tournament play, or the nerves are shot, or fear of embarrassment. Now, all of that, the intent is to get a ball to a target. And this is what the body is doing to that. So what Michael is talking about in that article, there may be something that if you were present to it, would take away the reason that your hands and arms and fingers have to flip around like that. And that would make a bigger difference than anything else. I mean, I've done lots of workshops with people, the yips, stabs, and flinches.
Yeah, he talks about you asking a student to putt a ball into a cup from 2 inches away and to notice the experience and with almost no thought involved, right? I mean, it's 2 inches away. What's it going to take? Boom, you know, it's in. And then you repeat the exercise gradually going further and further away. Would that help somebody?
Well, the first thing, that would begin to expose the whole nature of doubt. You know, there's people call fear and doubt. But my experience, it's never about fear.
Mm.
If you didn't doubt it, you wouldn't fear it. Doubt comes first. Fear follows so closely that we associate fear a lot.
Ah, yes, yes, that makes perfect sense.
So you move a ball about, let's say, to a foot and a half from the hole, and a story comes up like, I might miss. And from that story, a person literally is in their head, and the body starts doing things that are less than optimal. So to be able to, as Michael would say in the article, to let go of that story and come back to something that's real that we talked about earlier. See, putting from 2 inches is maybe the only real putting you'll get. If you could make the same 2-inch putt the same way of being and the same way of focusing that you do from 20 feet, you know, the body's gone through a million years of evolution. It's amazing. And we don't even know how to get it to work. We think we get it to work by saying, back of the left hand of the hole, stay down and follow through. Well, the body doesn't understand English. It speaks a language called awareness or presence. I think that's what Michael was alluding to in that article.
Yeah, well, it really spoke to me and made me want to meet Fred Shoemaker, coach and teacher and founder of Extraordinary Golf, even more so. Because it just said so much, about how you coach and how you teach. Another article I found about you kind of broke down some of the things that you teach in your philosophy, and I love this one. Let's see now. You got into teaching on your teaching style, he says, quote, Mr. Shoemaker instead of falling in love with being the answer man, I became interested in learning. So I take that to mean that you don't think you have all the answers. You're constantly still learning.
Well, I don't think I really have any answer for another person, but I think we can create an environment in which they can discover it for themselves. When I started giving golf lessons in 1974, and I thought my job was to give information and have people come to an understanding. So I got the best information, gave people a lot of information, it didn't make much difference. And as a teacher, you kind of fall in love with having everybody say, well, he's so smart, he's the golf doctor, he's got a lot of, he's got the solutions for everything.
Right.
And you can fall in love with that. But I realized that nothing remarkable was happening in my lessons. People think they didn't practice enough or they couldn't take it from the range of the course, and you couldn't screw up the kids very much. But what I really, at some point, I got more interested in how do we learn? And how do we create an environment without evaluation or judgment in which learning is at the highest it could possibly be? And that's what I put my attention on for the next bunch of decades. Because at some point, when a student leaves the golf school, if they haven't created that environment for themselves, when they're practicing on a range alone, and I'm going to say it again, it's an environment in which it's without judgment and without evaluation, in which you feel safe to explore and learn. If they haven't created that for themselves, then we haven't done our job in the golf school, because mostly you're coaching yourself.
There are people who like to describe you as a mental coach, but I see you as an all-around everything coach and teacher.
Yeah, the idea of mental and physical being separate. I mean, nowhere. I'm very interested in where the face of the club is and solid contact, the capacity to form a swing plane. But however, we may go about it very differently by having the student experience it versus understand it and simply conceptualize about it. I mean, it's like, Danielle, if you were to ride a bicycle, would it help you going to the dictionary to find out what balance is about? I mean, didn't your parents kind of push you off in a safe place, and you fell and you fell and you fell, and then eventually you rode the bike?
Yeah.
Well, suppose golf is like that. I mean, the club face, swing plane, solid contact, alignment, letting go. Suppose what you can do is create an environment in which those can be discovered. Like balance in a bicycle, and when a person discovers them, they're their own. They can keep them. It isn't like this idea that flits out every day. And I find that when a person really feels where the club head is, like you were saying, you get at the top of the swing, you wonder, "Where's my club head? Where's my club head?"
Yes.
Well, you're wondering that for a good reason, because you probably don't know where it is.
Yes.
But if you did know where it was, there's the mind that then can leave it and go on to whatever's next. I mean, if I coached you in tap dancing, but we had Novocaine in both your feet, you would never tap dance. Even though you understood tap dancing and you read about it, take a lot of lessons, you're never going to tap dance. I think that's the way it is with golfers. Their awareness, the capacity to experience things while the swing is happening, is the only thing that will develop them.
And my brain says, okay, but first I have to learn, and before I can become fully aware of everything that's going on. It's amazing how much it will come back and say, this can't be possible. There's got to be something else that goes into it for me to get to that point. And it's just one of those things that happens, and I have to say thank you for sharing. Let's move along. Thank you. The two books that you've written, Extraordinary Golf, The Art of the Possible, described by the editor of a national golf magazine as the future of golf instruction. Tell me what you wanted to do with this book.
Well, we want to take a look at golf as a full experience. It's not just about swinging, but it's also about 99% of the time of golf is a time between shots. And we want to take a look at that. It's about learning how to learn and developing self-trust and dealing with a voice in your head and being able to be a person around whom people want to play with, distinguishing gratitude as a state of being in which to play golf from, those kinds of things, versus that the thought is, if I just get my swing down, it's all going to work out someday. And golf, there's so much more to it. I mean, even when you left the golf course, suppose you could be better in life from having played golf. You could have learned about concentration. You could find peace of mind. You could distinguish how to overcome obstacles with grace and ease. Those would be useful everywhere.
Exactly.
So the book had an intent to look at that as in a broad sort of way, to realize that the way we are in golf is the way we are in the rest of our lives. It's still us. And to make a difference in the game may also make a difference in life. I mean, just in a simple way. I mean, Danielle, being good at golf isn't going to do you any good. I mean, it isn't going to help your bank account. It won't help your being a better citizen. It won't help your relationship. So being good at the game is put up as a big deal, but it's disproportionately valuable. But all the other things we're talking about, no, those are valuable. You know, learning how to let go of the voice in your head and learning how to trust yourself. Those are valuable.
And go on to other things in life. Absolutely.
Yes,
that's why I love the game.
Me too.
Yeah. Fred Shoemaker, he has taught over 42,000 lessons, thousands of golf schools and workshops, helping people overcome obstacles that prevent them from discovering and expressing their potential. And you can take it from the game of golf into all facets of life. I love what Gary McCord said. Extraordinary golf restored what little sanity survived in my feeble brain. Yes.
He has a nice way of saying things. Yes,
he does. He does. And by the by, I have a blast on the golf course. I'm just exposing the little voice in my head for the sake of conversation so that everyone else who has that voice, you know, they may not want to talk about it, but it's there and it helps them to listen. If you don't hit the ball, if you don't get it that far, don't worry about it. Pick up the ball, move along, have fun, look around you. You are so blessed to be out in nature. One of the most, I mean, they're like gorgeous parks that we're allowed to stroll through. And if we can take that kind of European attitude, the St. Andrews attitude to the golf course and bring it to our golf courses. So this is a lovely walk. It's not a walk spoiled at all. Your other book, before we close, we're talking with Fred Shoemaker, author, coach, teacher, founder. He has the school Extraordinary Golf, and you can find him at extraordinarygolf.com and also on Facebook, Extraordinary Golf, okay? And you can see that snippet from Morning Drive with Damon Hack on Facebook at Extraordinary Golf, and then you'll totally get what we're talking about here so you can see it. But I think we did a really good job of describing it on the radio. Extraordinary Putting, transforming the whole game. I can transform the game through putting?
Well, putting simply shows how you are in the rest of your game, your relationship to learning, the relationship to trust. So we just took one aspect of the game, but realized it was involving the whole game, too, and began to see through the lens of putting how you would be in the entire rest of the game. And it was fun to go into it that way. But I also wanted to say before we complete that that you've had this radio show for a long time, and I can see that your love for the game and your curiosity for the game, and it really comes through. And I really appreciate the depth and time that we're able to explore these things. It's a rare thing. I just wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you for being on the show and spending time with me. This is what Paul McGinley, the European Tour player, the Ryder Cup team captain, the co-captain, Paul McGinley, in all my years playing, studying, and reading about the game, nobody has gotten closer to its soul than Fred Shoemaker. Thank you so much for being on the show with me.
Danielle, thank you. It was fun.
Awesome. Aloha.
All righty. Bye-bye.
We're going to come back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Wow, what a beautiful day. Let's go back in the clubhouse and listen to Danielle Tucker.
And, you know, I just wanted to add one more thought And this comes from the author I was talking about, who wrote an article about Fred Shoemaker after attending one of the golf schools that Michael Bader is his name. He's in San Francisco. He closed his article with this. Long before Fred Shoemaker picked up a golf club, a non-golfer, Albert Einstein, described the value of tapping into our deeper experience when he said, "The intuitive mind is a sacred gift. The rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift." Now, there's some food for thought.